The Holy Gospel according to John. Then Jesus, again greatly disturbed, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and a stone was lying against it. Jesus said, "Take away the stone." Martha, the sister of the dead man, said to him, "Lord, already there is a stench because he has been dead for 4 days." Jesus said to her, "Did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God?" So they took the stone away. And Jesus looked upwards and said, "Father, I thank you for having heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I have said this for the sake of the crowd standing here, so that they may believe that you sent me." When he had said this, he cried with a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out!" The dead man came out, his hands and feet bound with strips of cloth, and his face wrapped in a cloth. Jesus said to them, "Unbind him and let him go." Many of the Jews, therefore, who had come with Mary and had seen what Jesus did, believed in him. But some of them went to the Pharisees and told them what he had done. So the chief priests and the Pharisees called a meeting of the council and said, "What are we to do? This man is performing many signs. If we let him go on like this, everyone will believe in him, and the Romans will come and destroy both our holy place and our nation." But one of them, Caiaphas, who was high priest that year, said to them, "You know nothing at all. You do not understand that it is better for you to have one man die for the people than to have the whole nation destroyed." He did not say this on his own, but being high priest that year, he prophesied that Jesus was about to die for the nation, and not for the nation only, but to gather into one of the dispersed children of God. So from that day, they planned to put him to death. The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, O Christ. Please be seated.
Well, it's good to be back with you today. You were, you're kind of a congregation of firsts. You were my first congregation at Bethlehem to be able to share a sermon with you. I think Ben and Mary had had their final Sunday, so I came out here with you. And then today I'm being installed as a first. This will happen in a couple of weeks in Bethlehem and in Minneapolis, and it's good to be with you. I have a couple of council members, I think, here. Elizabeth's here, and so is John. Anybody else that I'm missing? Joan? All right. Okay, thank you. We're going to invite the council to come up when I get installed. We're not installing them officially, but they can come and stand by me and give me courage along the way. I look forward to that. Let's begin with a word of prayer. Gracious God, we are so grateful to be your people. We're so grateful when you call us by name. Speak to us in our names and in our hearts this day and remind us that we belong to you. Amen. A crowd of people witnessed the same event. Often they have very different responses to it. We see this in a courtroom as witnesses give conflicting testimonies. We see it as doctors give different diagnoses to the same patient. We see it in the divergent paths of politicians in Washington as they try to fix our nation's problems. We see it also when Jesus shows up at the home of Mary and Martha. He comes in response to Lazarus' illness. The worried sisters had sent word for him to come, and Jesus was their friend. And for whatever reason, though, Jesus got delayed. And now Lazarus is dead. If you were in worship last week, you heard the story of Jesus getting agitated at the sight of Mary and others who are weeping. And soon he begins to weep too. A number of bystanders have come to console the sisters And people being people, they have different reactions to it. Some are greatly moved by Jesus weeping. See how much he loved him, they say. But others are sharply critical. Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying? Jesus doesn't try to win over the skeptics. Rather, he goes to Lazarus' tomb to see and do what only he is capable of doing. As John tells the story, he makes a point of bluntly calling Lazarus the dead man on two separate occasions. When Jesus instructs the bystanders to take away the stone, Martha points out that he's been in the tomb already for 4 days. There'll be a smell. Why all these details? Because in Jewish thinking at the time, the soul left the body after 3 days. And John drives home the point that Lazarus really is dead. And whatever happens to him is no mere resuscitation. It requires resurrection. So what would you have been thinking if you'd been one of those bystanders? That might depend on what you think happens when we die. Death is the darkest mystery we will ever face. We have far more questions than answers. People who've had a near-death experience come back telling of a tunnel with a bright light on the other side. Some see Jesus, others don't. And they're often described the other side as a place of peace and tranquility. So is that the answer? Is death merely a dark door into a brighter world? My brother-in-law Merle was diagnosed with a brain tumor in 1997. It came 2 short years after his daughter Corey was killed in a tragic car accident. It was one heartbreaking sorrow upon another for my sister Marie, first her college-age daughter, and now her husband. We prayed for a miracle, but none came. As the end of Merle's life drew near, my wife Brenda went to South Dakota to help out. She's a nurse. She spent time at Merle's bedside, tending to his needs, trying to make him comfortable. Brenda stayed up that last night with him. She dozed off and on. And in the middle of the night, she woke suddenly with a start. She blinked and shook her head. And there came Corey in the room with her father, plain as day. She was dressed in jeans and a sweatshirt. And Corey put her hands on the side of the bed and looked into her father's eyes. It was as if she was trying to tell him something, perhaps to say that he was going to be all right. And Brenda called out, "Corey, is that you?" And Corey stayed for a moment longer and then suddenly was gone. And to this day, Brenda finds herself wondering, did that really happen? Was Corey actually there in the room with them? Or was it only a dream? That's the thing about death. There are so many questions we can't answer. We don't get to follow Merle and Corey and Lazarus to the other side. All we have to go on is Jesus' slender thread of promise. I am the resurrection and the life. Those who believe in me, even though they die, will live. Jesus goes to Lazarus' tomb. The stone is about as heavy as Martha's heart. "Been 4 days, Jesus," says Martha. "The body's going to smell." And Jesus gently chides her. "Did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God?" Believing is an important word in John's gospel. It's less about understanding matters of life and death and more about being in a relationship with Jesus and trusting him. And Jesus stands outside the dead man's tomb. I can picture him brushing away tears in his eyes. Lazarus is his friend, as we've heard, but he's more than that. Lazarus is a sheep in the good shepherd's flock. And as such, Jesus knows his name. And Jesus looks upward toward heaven. He prays to the Father. And then he cries out with a loud voice, I think you've said it, Lazarus, come out. And the dead man comes out, grave clothes and all. Do you believe this? It's an incredible story. Again, it's not resuscitation, it's resurrection. And even though Lazarus gets his life back, it's not really a story about life after death. Someday Lazarus will die again. No, this is a picture of the abundant life Jesus is offering him and us here and now. And notice that our story doesn't end with the raising of Lazarus. Remember, people often react differently to the same events. Many of the friends and neighbors are overjoyed. They believe in Jesus. But others are openly skeptical. They go to the religious leaders, the Pharisees, and report what has happened. Then turn the Pharisees, call the chief priests. They hold an emergency meeting of the Sanhedrin, their council. And why? For damage control. If we let this Galilean rabbi go on doing things like this, pretty soon everyone will believe in him. And soon their sole aim is to control the information being spread about Jesus. And truth be told, it's probably not so different than what's going on in Russia these days. We're keenly aware of the events in Ukraine. Painful as they are to watch, we can't stop. With a free and open media, we see everything from the bombings of maternity wards to little kids saying goodbye to their dads to the elderly fleeing their homes with walkers. And everywhere, people are hurrying to get on a bus or a train. Or if they're really brave or stubborn, they're hiding out in a makeshift bomb shelter. We see these images and are heartbroken. We so wish things could be different. We long for the Russian people to rise up and put a stop to the atrocities of President Putin and those in power. But then we remember. People often respond differently to the exact same events, especially when the information is carefully controlled. Russian citizens cannot call what's happening in Ukraine an invasion or a war. They risk imprisonment if they do. State-controlled media carefully filters the pictures and refers to the events as a special military operation. And over they say that it's justified. Russians are fed reports that Ukraine was a victim of NATO aggression, that Ukraine was persecuting citizens who spoke Russian, that they were siding with Americans and creating chemical weapons. And as we hear this, we are shocked and saddened and terribly dismayed. Why is it so hard to get to the truth? You may not know this, but something similar was happening when John wrote his gospel. Israel was occupied by an invading Roman army. And once they got there, they stayed for over 100 years. Minor skirmishes broke out from time to time. And then there was a Jewish group called the Zealots who took up arms against the Romans. That led to an all-out war. and the temple was destroyed in AD 70. Their capital in Jerusalem was nothing more than a pile of rubble. They lost the heart and soul of their nation. And afterwards, synagogues became the primary gathering place for Jewish religious life. And into that nightmare come people like Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. They tell the story of Jesus, and as they do, they try to make sense of what's happened. And one by one, they ask, do the followers of Jesus have any kind of future? And some of the Jews had come to believe that Jesus was, in fact, the long-awaited Messiah, but many did not. Most did not. Life was incredibly hard for those early Christians, and when their numbers got strong, they were expelled from the synagogue. You don't belong here. Go away. And so not only had they lost their temples and their homeland, but also their sense of identity. And John writes his gospel to give them hope. Hang on, he's telling them. Jesus, the Good Shepherd, knows your name. It might feel risky to believe in him, but he's offering you a life unlike any other. Indeed, he is the resurrection and the life. You can trust him. Today, fortunately, we don't face the challenges of those first century believers who'd been expelled from the synagogue. Nor do we face the terrible devastation and turmoil that is being brought to bear on the people of Ukraine. In humility, we are grateful for that. Still, we are well aware that following Jesus often comes with a cost. We pledge to stand with those in Ukraine who are hurting, to pray for those whose hope seems gone, to offer what resources we can to support them. And I have no doubt Jesus continues to weep at what he sees today. It's so very hard to get to the truth. In a great, big, messy world, truth for John is rooted in the story of Jesus. Lazarus' death and resurrection foreshadows Jesus' own death and resurrection. Bethany is only 2 miles away from Jerusalem, and Jesus is ready to die, not only for Jewish people, but for all people everywhere. Friends, whatever your troubles that you're experiencing these days, here's some truth to bank on. Jesus is the Good Shepherd. He knows your name. He's willing to lay down his life for every last one of us. And nothing, not even death, can separate us from his love. Amen.